Sports is supposed to be a distraction, not an alarm bell sounding an international emergency. But on Wednesday night, everyone who might somehow have downplayed or minimized COVID-19 got a resounding wake-up call, courtesy of the National Basketball Association.
More breaking news surrounding COVID-19 tonight. In an unprecedented move, the NBA has suspended all games for the rest of the regular season until further notice.
The NBA season might have ended last night, and what an abrupt and shocking ending it would be after the NBA found out one of its players tested positive for coronavirus and found this out just moments before that player was set to take the court and play in a game.
This is something out of a movie, and you just don't expect it to happen in real life.
The NBA was just the first domino to fall in North American sports. And the way it did was terrifying. They postponed a game that was about to start while fans were in their seats. A player had tested positive. And once the league announced it was suspending its games, that broke the dam. So, no more distraction at all. Instead, there's a gaping hole where we used to turn for frivolous comfort. Did the leagues pull the plug in time? What will happen now? And when they eventually resume, what will the cost be? We can add those to the list of questions that nobody wants to ask, but now dominate the conversation. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Michael Grange is a senior writer at Sportsnet. He covers the NBA, or at least did, before it was suspended. Hi, Michael.
Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. We are just trying to keep up as I talk to you, and I'm sure you've seen it. The NHL has just suspended its season as well.
It's just remarkable how the pace of these things, and it's almost kind of a symbol or an apt emblem for the problem that's kind of confronting everybody is, you know, you look at how this issue affected the sports world, and it was, you know, just in the space of three or four days, it was kind of incremental, and, you know, people were paying, there's a little bit more urgency around it, and then, you know, everything's just kind of come on like a tidal wave. And, you know, that's roughly, I think, how the illness itself kind of manifests itself through populations is, you know, it's sort of, there's a little bit of a creep, a little bit of concern, and then all of a sudden it's too late and things have kind of spiraled. And I can't really recall anything as it relates to sports where, you know, the things and news and developments have come so quickly and rapidly and suddenly.
Describe the scene at the NBA game that forced the suspension of the season, because that seemed to really be the tipping point for all of this.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder were hosting the Utah Jazz. There was some concern that Rudy Gobert, who's sort of like the star center for the Jazz, you know, was ill. He'd been kind of exhibiting signs of, I think he'd been tested for strep throat and was exhibiting signs of being unwell. And he was given a test for COVID-19, I believe, the day of the game. And he never went to the arena. He was home, but had that, or sorry, not at home, he was at the team's hotel. But had that test been negative, in other words, that he simply had a kind of a more common kind of flu, his expectation and plan was to play the game. And so the two teams are on the floor, the music is playing, the crowd is in the building. You know, the tip is approaching, and right around the time when the ball would have been going up and all of that, you know, one of the team medical officials for the Oklahoma City Thunder kind of came running out of the back of the building onto the floor, gathered the officials, gathered the coaches. And my understanding is that at the point he said, listen, we've got a player here who's tested positive for COVID-19. And, you know, the response came very quickly after that. It was determined they would have to at least have to postpone that game. It took them a while to figure out how to relay that information to the crowd. They did. And, you know, within, you know, the hour almost of that decision, the NBA realized it had to suspend operations for the foreseeable future.
What had the discussion around this virus and the NBA, or even to this virus and sports in the bigger picture been leading up to that? What kind of measures were being taken? What were people considering? Because I got the sense that this escalated very quickly.
You sensed correctly. You know, the NBA has gotten a lot of credit for being very proactive and a little bit ahead of the charge as it relates to the other North American sports. I don't know if they can actually claim that in this instance. You know, we saw how rapidly this had escalated in parts of Asia and Europe. And as of last week, you know, the first kind of acknowledgement of the virus by the NBA was, you know, kind of an internal memo that was never made public, but kind of came out saying, you know, players, staff, be conscious of, you know, instead of shaking hands and kind of dapping, so slapping hands, you know, go with elbow bumps and fist bumps when you're, and, you know, don't feel obligated to sign autographs. So it was really about the players kind of insulating themselves from interactions with the public. The next stage of that, but it wasn't taken very seriously. And so I certainly saw players continue doing that, and no one was really making a big deal of it, which echoes, I think, the way a lot of people in North America were kind of looking at it as recently as a week ago. I believe it was on Tuesday that, you know, the league and in conjunction with the other major North American sports kind of put in new measures about how the media would interact with players. You know, they would have to keep a certain distance between players during interviews, and that there wouldn't be no more of the scrum type access. Everything would be kind of in more of a bit of a press conference type setting. And again, that was all seen as a preventative measure to kind of keep the players distanced. So that's Tuesday. You know, and things by this time were really escalating in Italy, I think, was sort of the, you know, where a lot of the news is really coming out and the picture is getting more grim. And so on, as of Wednesday afternoon, the board of governors of the league, so representatives from each of the franchise, representatives of the owners of each of the franchises, if not the owners themselves, were on conference calls and trying to come up with a plan. And at that point, the plan was try to keep playing games, but maybe we'll have to limit fans, or maybe we'll, you know, if a game is supposed to be in Boston and there's concerns there about an outbreak, maybe the game can be played in, you know, instead of Boston and Detroit, it'll be Boston at Detroit sort of thing, a road game instead of a home game. So, you know, again, just sort of like half measures. But when it was found out a player was positive, then their hands were forced, because if you kind of, you know, the NBA is such a small community, and, you know, it's just this traveling circus of tall men, you know, and they kind of bounce around the continent, and it, you know, you could do a Venn diagram. You know, somebody on Twitter actually did an exercise like this and showed that if you, all you need to go back is about 5 or 6 days, and you can see all the players that Rudy Gobert played against, and then all the players that those players played against, and you almost had the entire league covered within a 5-day span, certainly a 10-day span. So at that point, you know, the writing was on the wall that they, you know, they just simply couldn't continue, because you don't know who else is infected. And it's turned out at least one other player has been infected with the Jazz, and all the teams that have played the Jazz, including the Toronto Raptors in the past 10 to 14 days, are now being tested.
So tell me what that means for the Raptors in particular, because they just played the Jazz, and what it means for sports in Canada.
Well, as it relates to the Raptors, I mean, you know, it's just a kind of a complete 180. You know, they played in Utah on Monday night, and it was sort of the end of like their longest road trip of the season. And, you know, the Raptors were true to form. They were shorthanded, kind of had every reason not to win the game, given they were on the road and they had played the night before and were fatigued and all the rest of it. And, you know, did their usual kind of plucky, courageous thing and won the game and came home on a red eye. Their charter came home after the game, so kind of flew a red eye type flight, landing in Toronto early Tuesday morning, and upbeat, right? And they weren't scheduled to play again until this coming Saturday, so they had a few days off, which is rare in the NBA schedule that you actually get consecutive days off. You know, a couple of the coach, Nick Nurse, had his, the launch of his charity scheduled at a hotel downtown, and Norman Powell, another player, had a charity event, and all that went off without a hitch. So around 9:30 p.m., everyone starts getting notifications and of what's going on. And by midnight, a number of players, or a good number of the players, had been tested at a Toronto hospital. All the traveling party with the Raptors, so broadcasters, medical personnel, team security personnel, there's a party of about 50 people. They all were required to have been tested. My understanding, most have as of today. And so they're just waiting for the results of that. I think my understanding is it should take about 24 hours from the time of the test. And, and that'll dictate next moves. I mean, in the immediate term, they've been advised to not only quarantine, but isolate. So, sort of isolate themselves within their own house. But the expectation is you're not out and about in your community or your home, and just kind of hope for the best regarding the outcome of these tests. But it's a massive development as it relates to the Raptors in particular. And I think also, it's also put the NHL, as we talked about off the top. I think once the NBA made that decision, the NHL had no choice but to follow through with that, a similar type decision. I mean, the Raptors and Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, share a building. I think there's 11 mm-hmm. markets in the league where the NHL and the NBA share buildings. And so, regardless of the chances of cross-contamination, you're in a very awkward situation where, the players who work for the team in the NBA are being quarantined and the season suspended. And it'd be a very awkward conversation for if you're playing hockey for the same ownership group to say, no, you guys go ahead.
Right.
So I think it's just sort of really kind of put a blanket on everything. And now we're seeing even more. Like, you wonder what's going to happen with junior hockey. What's going to happen with, see some international hockey events for young people have been postponed, and just how far these ripples are going to spread out.
Obviously, the health of the players and fans is of foremost importance, but I also wanted to ask you about the economic implications here. I mean, just in Toronto alone, without the Leafs and Raptors playing, that's a lot of money left on the table, a lot of jobs, et cetera, but more than that, even the broadcast content.
Look, it's a big deal. I mean, sports is a massive driver of so many parts of the economy now. And it's almost quaint to call it sports. It really is entertainment, and it's a big, big slice of the entertainment pie. The a ton of eyeballs, a ton of attention, a ton of passion is attached to to these games and these teams. And, the reverberations are everywhere, as you point out. So, the bar scene downtown around Scotiabank Arena, it'll be done. It'll be dead, right? Like, I mean, so much of it is driven by, those 82 home dates that the Leafs and the Raptors share around Scotiabank Arena. And obviously, I'm sure concerts and everything would be affected, too, in this context. Then you're talking about the people who actually work at the arenas, the gig economy out there, the Uber drivers, the Uber Eats, the pizzas that get ordered for watching games at home. We won't know the impact of all of this. And of course, the teams, they're going to bear a brunt of it too. I mean, a home game for at least a Raptors game at Scotiabank Arena, that's probably generating $2 or $3 million in revenue.
Yeah.
And, that's, you would presume a company come LLC can absorb it, but I'm sure they don't like to. And you look at the company we work for and, how much of what Sportsnet does is driven around live sports content and kind of leveraging that for all their other, it's really the reason it exists as an entity. And, so people are scrambling as we speak, I'm sure, to try and figure out how to maneuver around that. So, I'd say the good news is, one way or the other, it'll pass. And, the hope is that by some really aggressive action now, that it'll pass with less impact to, I'm talking to people, than it would otherwise. And then, people, in time, the pieces can get picked up and there'll be a lot of pent-up demand out there for a lot of things, sports included. And, that's you just hope that what seems like some pretty drastic decisions now will pay off, because it means that, the path of this whole virus and everything associated with it will be kind of mitigated somewhat.
What's it been like for you and for your colleagues? I mean, You used to work in print media, as did I. They used to call you the toy department, right? Like, this is the place where people come for distraction, where people come to let off steam after they've been inundated with bad news all day. You know, how are you guys dealing with now reporting the same bad news as everyone else?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, sports, you know, the notion of sports as a toy department, I mean, I think it only goes so far. And I think in moments like this, and it's been shown, I think, in other issues regarding race and economy and, you know, other kind of social questions, that sports becomes almost a forum for them being discussed and exposed and addressed. And because it's in a almost like a controlled context, you can, you know, what would happen if an NBA player came out and said they were gay? Well, it gives you a kind of environment where you can kind of talk about it. And that discussion itself furthers the discussion outside of sports. So in this context, I think the urgency with which the general population might have treated the coronavirus has probably been increased significantly in a very short period of time. And there's a lot of people who probably went from, well, this isn't that big a deal, there's only so many confirmed cases, it's really only affecting the elderly, to all of a sudden going, wow, okay, this, you know, if leagues are shutting down and this is why, well, maybe I'll read about it, and then they learn that much more, and they'll hear about it and learn that much more. And maybe a strange way, this is going to go down as a great public service. But yeah, the idea of, you know, us and as a sports reporter, sports journalist, and you know this as well as I do, you get thrown into these things more often than you might expect. And you know, you got to become, if not, it's certainly not an expert, but kind of versant in a pretty broad range of topics fast. And you know, that's almost become part of the job now.
Well, I wish it was a different topic that you had to become versed in, but thank you for walking us through this.
Thanks for having me on, Jordan.
Michael Grange of Sportsnet. And that was the big story. For more, including stories of sports from happier times, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. And you can subscribe and rate and review in any podcast player you like, from Apple to Google to Stitcher to Spotify to dozens more. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor, and I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Wash your hands this weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk Monday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.